Carl, Darren, and Julie, three friends since childhood, had always shared a passion for travel and adventure. After years of saving up and planning, they finally decided to embark on the trip of a lifetime. They packed their bags, loaded up their backpacks, and set off to explore the world. Their first stop was Tokyo, Japan, where they spent days wandering through neon-lit streets, sampling street food, and marveling at ancient temples. As they wandered through the bustling streets of Shinjuku, they stumbled upon a tiny alleyway filled with tiny bars and clubs. The neon lights and pulsating music drew them in like moths to a flame. They ducked into a small club called Golden Grotto, where a group of musicians were playing a hypnotic blend of rock and traditional Japanese instruments. The air was thick with the smell of sake and incense, and the crowd was a mix of locals and tourists all united in their appreciation for the music. Carl, Darren, and Julia danced the night away, lost in the infectious rhythms and vibrant energy of the club. As the night wore on, they stumbled upon a group of cosplayers dressed as anime characters, who invited them to join the impromptu dance party. As they joined the group, they were handed glow sticks and welcomed with open arms. The night became a blur of spinning lights, thumping bass, and infectious laughter. They danced alongside cosplayers dressed as Naruto, Light Yagami from Death Note, and even a giant robot from Gundam. Carl, Darren, and Julie couldn't help but join in on the fun, donning makeshift costumes and striking poses with their new friends. As the night wore on, they stumbled upon a group of enthusiasts playing a game of akampai, a Japanese drinking game where players take turns singing karaoke songs while downing shots of sake. Carl, Darren, and Julie were hesitant at first, but soon found themselves belting out their favorite J-pop tunes alongside the locals. The group's energy was infectious, and soon they were all laughing and having the time of their lives. When it was finally Darren's turn to sing, he stepped up to the mic with a confident grin. "I've got this," he said, winking at Julie. And then, in perfect harmony, they launched into a duet of Say, Say, Say by Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney. Darren took on MJ's parts, his smooth voice gliding effortlessly over the iconic bass line. Meanwhile, Julie brought his own brand of British charm to the table, channeling Paul McCartney's melodic vocals with uncanny accuracy. The crowd went wild as they belted out the catchy chorus, their voices blending together in perfect harmony. The women in the crowd swooned, their eyes shining with adoration. For a moment, it seemed like Darren and Julie were the reincarnations of MJ and Paul, transported from the 80s to bring joy to the good people of Tokyo. As they finished their set to thunderous applause, the pair took a triumphant bow, basking in the glow of newfound stardom. Who knew that a drunken karaoke session would launch them into local celebrity status? But as they left the club arm in arm with their new friends, they couldn't help but feel like they were on top of the world. As they left the karaoke club, they were mobbed by fans and paparazzi. It seemed that their impromptu performance had gone viral on social media, and they were now local celebrities overnight. The next thing they knew, they were being whisked away to a television studio for a live broadcast. "Welcome to Tokyo Tonight," the host exclaimed, as Darren and Julie took their seats alongside the other contestants. "Tonight, we have two international visitors who have become overnight sensations in Tokyo. Please welcome Carl, Darren, and, Julie." The camera panned across the audience, showing thousands of people screaming and waving signs with their names on them. Darren and Julie exchanged nervous glances, but as they took their places at the microphones, something strange happened. They felt a surge of confidence, and before long, they were belting out another flawless duet, this time accompanied by full orchestra. Meanwhile, Carl had wandered off to explore Yodobashi Akiba Market, one of Tokyo's most famous electronic shopping districts. He spent hours browsing the stalls, marveling at the latest gadgets and gizmos. As he entered a particularly crowded store, he stumbled upon a group of cosplayers dressed as his favorite anime characters. "Konnichiwa," they chorused in unison as Carl's eyes widened in surprise. "You're from, outside Japan, feeling like a rock star," Carl grinned and launched into an impromptu rendition of "Gotta Be Mine" by Arctic Monkeys. The cosplayers cheered and sang along, forming a makeshift mosh pit around him. As the day drew to a close, Darren and Julie were hailed as heroes on Japanese television, while Carl returned to his hotel room exhausted but exhilarated from his market adventure. As Carl wanders through the crowded streets of Tokyo, he stumbles upon a small electronic shop tucked away in a quiet alley. The sign above the door reads, "Tokyo Tech Treasures," and the windows are filled with an assortment of gadgets and gizmos that catch his eye. Carl pushes open the door and steps inside, greeted by the owner, an elderly man with a kind face and a passion for technology. The old man introduces himself as Hiro, and begins to show Carl some of the most impressive devices he's found in his years of scouring the city's markets. Among the treasures on display is a handheld device that can translate languages in real time, a miniature drone that can fly through tight spaces, and a smartwatch that can track vital signs and detect health anomalies. Carl is amazed by the technology and decides to purchase all three items, knowing that they could come in handy during their adventures. As he leaves the shop, Carl can't help but feel grateful for the unexpected discovery. He makes his way back to the hotel, eager to show Darren and Julie his new finds. It seems like Darren and Julie have been up to something quite unexpected. Carl returns to the hotel only to find that they're nowhere to be found. He decides to search for them and eventually tracks them down to a rooftop where they are putting on an impromptu gig in front of thousands of people gathered in the town square. As the performance reaches its climax, Julie gets too caught up in the moment and takes off all his clothes, leaving him stark naked. The crowd gasps in shock, but Darren just laughs and continues to play his guitar with a cheeky grin on his face. Just as things are getting out of hand, the police arrive on the scene, responding to noise complaints from the neighbors. Carl rushes over to try and calm the situation down, but it's clear that they're going to have to make a quick exit before things get any worse. Carl, alright guys, we need to go, now, Darren, Owa, do we have to, this is just getting good, Dooley, yeah, come on, Carl, we can't leave now, the people are loving us, Carl, no, Dooley, this isn't worth going to jail for, let's get out of here before things escalate further, Darren, fine, but can we at least grab our instruments, I don't want them confiscated by the cops, Dooley, and my phone, I have some awesome selfies from tonight, Carl, Dooley, focus, we need to leave now, with Darren and Julie's instruments in hand. Carl leads them on a wild goose chase through the streets of Tokyo, dodging police officers and leaping over obstacles as they go. As they reach the outskirts of the city, Carl pulls out his trusty drone and starts flying above the rooftops. The three of them pile onto the drone, holding on for dear life as it takes off into the night sky. They soar above the city, leaving the chaos behind, and make their way towards the coast. As they fly over the ocean, Carl expertly navigates the drone towards a small island nation that's rumored to be a haven for fugitives like themselves. After a tense but exhilarating flight, they finally land on the shores of Bermuda. The crystal clear waters and pink sand beaches are a welcome respite from their chaotic adventure. As they make their way through the island's lush forests and scenic roads, they stumble upon a quaint little cafe that serves up delicious fish sandwiches and refreshing coconut water. As they sit on the beach, sipping their drinks and enjoying the laid-back atmosphere, they can't help but wonder what other adventures await them in this tropical paradise. Darren can't get enough of his beloved British cuisine, and the thought of fish sandwiches just isn't cutting it. He turns to Carl and Julie with a look of distaste on his face. Darren, blimey, lads, these fish sandwiches are an abomination. I need some real British grub, stat. Carl, mate, we're in Bermuda, not London. We can't exactly find a decent plate of bangers and mash here. Yuli, but think about it, Darren, a McDonald's on the island could be just what we need to lift our spirits, and who knows, maybe they have some decent British-style fries. Darren, you're right, Yuli, let's go find that Golden Arches and get ourselves a Big Mac or two. Carl, alright, but if this is a wild goose chase after the fish sandwiches, I'm blaming you guys. The three of them set off towards the center of the island, asking locals for directions until they finally spot the familiar red and yellow logo of McDonald's in the distance. As they burst through the doors, they are greeted by the heavenly aroma of fried burgers and fries. Darren's face lights up with excitement as he scans the menu. Darren, jackpot, they have McRibs, now we're talking. Carl, you're kidding me, right? This is a tourist trap, isn't it? Dooley, come on, Carl. Lighten up, we deserve a little indulgence after our wild night in Tokyo. The three of them proceed to order a mountain of fried goodness, much to the dismay of their beachside diet. After stuffing themselves with burgers and fries, Darren, Carl, and Julie stumble out of McDonald's, feeling like they've hit the jackpot. They continue walking through the island streets, enjoying the balmy evening air and the sound of reggae music drifting from a nearby bar. As they turn a corner, they notice a group of locals huddled around a street vendor, eyeing a peculiar contraption with a sign that reads Island Gan. Darren's eyes light up as he recognizes the telltale signs of weed. Darren, guys, I think we've hit the jackpot, let's get some of that island magic. Carl, dude, are you serious? We just got done eating at McDonald's. Dearly, but think about it, Carl. A little weed will enhance our appreciation for this beautiful island and its laid-back vibes. Darren, come on, don't be a party pooper, Carl. That'll be fun, I promise. Carl reluctantly agrees, and the three of them join the group around the vendor, purchasing a small quantity of Island Gania. They light up and take a few hits, feeling the sweet tropical breeze wash over them as they stroll towards their hotel. Upon arriving at the hotel, they check in and head straight to their room, where they collapse onto the bed, giggling uncontrollably. The weed is taking hold, and their conversation becomes increasingly nonsensical. Darren, I'm telling you, Carl, I saw a mermaid swimming in the ocean outside McDonald's. Carl, dude, you were hallucinating from the fish sandwiches. Julie, but have you seen the way the palm trees are swaying in harmony with the reggae beat? As they continue to laugh and joke around, it becomes clear that their minds are slowly losing their grip on reality. They start to see tropical island creatures dancing around them, and the room begins to spin. As the weed continues to take hold, Darren, Carl, and Julie become one with the tropical island vibes. They start to see colorful parrots and palm trees dancing around them, and the music from the bar next door becomes a symphony of pure joy. Darren, brothers, we've reached a new level of consciousness, we're one with the island. Carl, dude, I think you're right, I can feel the mana of the land guiding us. Dearly, and the music, oh man, it's like our souls are harmonizing with the beat as they continue to get high and lost in the moment. The hotel room becomes a psychedelic playground. They start to see visions of ancient island spirits, and the walls begin to glow with an otherworldly light. Suddenly, the door bursts open, and a group of local musicians storm into the room, instruments at the ready. They are dressed in traditional garb, with feathers and beads adorning their bodies. The air is electric with anticipation as they start to play a hypnotic rhythm that seems to match the beat of Darren's heart. Darren, whoa, this is it, we've reached peak island vibes. Carl, I think we're being initiated into a secret society or something. Yuli, and I'm feeling like I can communicate with the spirits. As the music reaches its climax, the room becomes a vortex of pure energy. The three friends are transported to a world beyond this mortal realm, where they become one with the island and its inhabitants. As the mystical energy dissipates, Darren, Carl, and Julie slowly come back to reality. They find themselves surrounded by a sea of vomit, with Julie lying on the floor, looking pale and clammy. Carl, dude, what happened? I think Julie overdosed on island magic. Darren, brother, we need to get him to the hospital or at least a shower. As they try to lift Julie off the floor, they realize that their hotel room has been transformed into a biohazard zone. The smell is unbearable, and the sight of Julie's vomit-covered clothes is too much to bear. Carl, ugh, this is disgusting. We need to get out of here and fast. Darren, I think we should call for help, but I'm not sure if they'll send someone with hazmat suit. As they try to figure out their next move, the door bursts open once again, this time with a team of hotel staff and emergency responders. They rush in, wearing full protective gear, and begin to clean up the mess. Yuli, ugh, I'm so sorry, guys, I think it was the weed. Carl, dude, we all did it, we're just not as weak as you. Let's just focus on getting cleaned up. As they are whisked away by the authorities, Darren turns to Carl with a worried expression. Darren, brother, I think our island adventure has taken a turn for the worse. Carl, agreed, let's just hope we can get out of here without any more unpleasantness. As they are hauled away by the authorities, Darren, Carl, and Julia are left wondering if their island adventure has finally come to an end. But little do they know, their misadventures are only just beginning. After a series of grueling interrogations and medical exams, the three friends find themselves behind bars in a small, dingy prison cell. The walls are made of rusty metal, and the air is thick with the smell of mold and despair. Carl, welcome to our new home, I think. Darren, great, just what we needed, a tropical vacation turned into a jail sentence. Julie, I'm just glad it wasn't worse like getting eaten by a shark or something. As they sit in silence, trying to process their circumstances, the sound of footsteps echoes down the corridor outside. The door creaks open, and a gruff-looking warden enters, flanked by two burly guards. Warden, welcome, gentlemen. You're going to be staying with us for a while, or at least until you pay your debt to society. Darren, what are we charged with? Warden, well, let us just say that munching on island magic is not exactly legal in these parts. Carl, island magic, you mean the weed? Warden, ah, yes, the infamous island weed. Well, let us just say that it's a bit of a problem here. Julie, I think we can explain it, but before Julie can finish his sentence, the warden cuts him off. Warden, no need to explain, you're going down for possession and probably some other charges I haven't even mentioned yet. Darren, this is ridiculous. We were just trying to have a little fun. The warden raises an eyebrow. Warden, fun? Is that what they call it these days? Well, I think you're going to find that fun comes with consequences. Now, let's get you boys settled in. As the guards drag them away, Darren turns back to Carl and Julie with a mixture of fear and resignation. Darren, I guess this is what they mean by island time. Carl, hot yeah, I think we're going to be here for a while. Julie, I just hope the food isn't as bad as it smells in here 2 weeks into their prison sentence. Darren, Carl, and Julie have adapted to their new surroundings in unexpected ways. Despite the bleak conditions, they've found ways to make the best of it. Darren, with his natural charisma, has somehow managed to become the king of the prison. He uses his influence to mediate disputes between inmates and guards, earning him a certain level of respect from both sides. He even has a small throne-like contraption made out of stolen pillows and blankets in his cell, where he holds court with his fellow prisoners. Julie, on the other hand, has discovered a hidden talent for salesmanship. He has started selling homemade candles made from prison-issue toilet paper and old rags to his fellow inmates, earning him the nickname the Prison Pitchman. His entrepreneurial spirit has even caught the attention of the warden, who is considering offering him a special deal on some prison-approved merchandise. Carl, meanwhile, has become the prison's resident IT guy. He has managed to hack into the prison's ancient computer system and has set up a makeshift network for his fellow inmates to share information and play games. His newfound tech skills have also earned him the respect of the guards, who often seek his help with their own computer problems. As they go about their daily routines, the three friends find ways to entertain themselves in prison. They've started a prison band, with Darren on vocals, Julie on lead guitar, and Carl on drums. Their biggest hit is a song called The Prison Shuffle, which has become a favorite among the inmate population. One day, while they were performing for their fellow prisoners, a group of tough-looking inmates from another cell block approached them. The leader of the group, a burly guy named Vinny, demands that they perform for him and his crew. Darren, ever the diplomat, agrees to put on a special show just for them. The performance is a huge success, with Vinny and his crew clapping along to every song. In fact, Iri's so impressed that they offer to trade some of their own contraband items, including a stash of contraband cigarettes, for one of Darren's famous homemade candles. Julie seizes the opportunity, making a deal that benefits both parties. The prison band becomes known as the Prison Punks, and their music spreads throughout the facility like wildfire. As the days turn into weeks, Darren, Carl, and Julie find themselves living in a strange sort of freedom within the prison walls. They've recreated their own little community, where they can be themselves and have fun despite the bleak surroundings.